Hey, Roxy.
Hey, James.
How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know why?
Why?
Because Creepy Kingdom has officially launched a Patreon account.
Patreon? What's Patreon?
Well, let me tell you, Patreon is a way that the listeners of the show can support us.
So, like a Kickstarter?
Not exactly. Kickstarter only is a one-time thing. On Patreon, our listeners can support us every month. And in exchange for them supporting us, we will give them special, super awesome prizes.
How much do they have to pay to support us?
They can pay whatever they want. You could pay $1 a month. You could pay $10, $100. It's up to them.
That's really cool. So how can Creepy Kingdom fans find this Patreon thing?
Well, you could go to creepykingdom.com and check the show notes on our recent episodes, or you could go to patreon.com/creepykingdom. That's patreon.com.
I'm going to go check it out right now.
Me too.
Spellcaster Media presents.
Welcome to episode 142 of the Creepy Kingdom podcast, a podcast all about the spookiness of films, theme parks, and beyond. I am your host, Mr. James H. Carter II, and welcome to the first Creepy Kingdom episode of 2018, and we're starting the year off correctly. As we bring to you the last stop on a world tour. But before we get the show started, just want to remind everyone out there, particularly those in the Seattle area, that Foolish Mortals, the documentary that I directed about Haunted Mansion fans, will be screening. We're having our Seattle premiere Saturday, January 20th at the Seattle Design Center. To get tickets and all the other information, go to foolishmortalsdoc.com. Also, if you want to know when Foolish Mortals will be screening in your area, the best thing for you to do is sign up for the Foolish Mortals mailing list. And do you have any guesses of where you can sign up for that mailing list? Any guesses? One? What was it? That's right. It's foolishmortalsdoc.com. So without any further ado, let's begin. All righty, we are here live. Well, it's not live, but it's live as we're recording it for the first show of 2018, wrapping up the world tour. The Disney parks. We got Brittany and Grant.
Hey, what's up, James?
Hi.
Need a little more enthusiasm from me there, Brittany. Come on. It's the world tour. It's come to a close.
You understand it's 11:30 at night here. Your 8:30 is our 11:30.
We're not really, I'm going to wait up till like 2 in the morning, though. So.
And I'm usually up until 10.
Oh, so you're actually asleep right now. You're sleep talking.
I actually was asleep until he came in the room and was going, "It's time to get on the podcast. Get out of bed." And I rolled over and was just like, "No, it's bedtime."
Yeah. I said, "No, this podcast is more important than your sleep."
Yeah.
Well, it's more important than all of our sleeps because we all could be sleeping now. But we're awake and we're bringing the entertainment and the facts and travel tips to our listeners. So little background in case you haven't heard the past episodes. Brittany and Grant have been traveling around the world to every Disney park and Aulani, which I guess it's a Disney resort that's not attached to a theme park. I don't think they have any other ones, right? Any non-theme park?
There's like one in South Carolina, I believe. And there's also another one in like, what is it? Like Miami, almost
Vero
Beach, where they have like a character dining once a week with like two characters, and you wouldn't really know it was a Disney resort unless you like really look for the fine details. But the Aulani one is pretty much it's pretty obvious Disney.
Yeah, that's over the top Disney.
I did a write up, but we didn't do any recording on it because there's really not very much creepy about Aulani. It's just there's nothing really creepy to do there.
Right, yeah. So you did a written review of that one, but all the other parks that you guys have visited, we have had a discussion, and we're actually coming around a year.
We did them all in 14 months.
14 months, every Disney park.
Absolutely, including Disneyland. We live on the East Coast. For those who don't know, we live in Florida. So
right, so Disneyland's part of that, but And I'm sure everyone knows by now, we're talking about, because you've heard the intro, but you guys just went to Disneyland Paris for Christmas, right?
Yes, we did.
Okay, I'm like, that wasn't Thanksgiving. I don't know. Everything's a blur. I was like, that was Christmas. And so we're recording this January 9th, so you're hot off your trip from Paris. I haven't been, and I know a lot of our listeners haven't been. So we're really interested to hear you guys' perspective. And you also did a few things outside of the parks that our listeners might be interested in as well. So I'll kind of just let you take it away since it's your trip.
Would you rather us start with the Disney stuff or the non-Disney?
Let's do the Disney. And then if we run out of time, then that stuff gets cut. But
yeah, of course.
Remember...
Well, first off, I want to say that if you live on – you know how I was telling you that if you live on the West Coast, it's very cheap to get to Asia. If you live on the East Coast, you can get to Paris relatively inexpensively. Brittany and I, our plane ticket combined was about $1,000 for a round trip from Florida.
Oh, not bad.
So not bad for two people combined. We did stay at a hotel that wasn't the nicest hotel. But it wasn't terrible, and it was three train stops away from Disney, so about a 15-minute – it was about 15 minutes between walking and once we walked from the hotel to the train, if we caught the train at the right time, it would take 15 minutes to get there. And for eight nights of hotel, I think I spent $320. So
wow.
If you're saying – I like to kind of tell people how they can do things a little more cheaply and more frugally.
Yeah.
So you can make these dreams a reality. Like $1,300, you have your plane flight and your hotel. Another weird trick when buying your Disney tickets is different countries get different prices for their tickets.
Hmm.
I know that this sounds really strange, but if you use if your bank allows you to do like foreign transactions, I found out that I was able to save on our 4-day park. They don't have a park hopper. Your ticket is good for both parks that they have there.
Okay.
But we bought 4-day passes and I found that I saved about $75 a ticket or so just by saying that we were from Britain and they didn't check. And I just bought it through the British version of the website. But if you buy it from the French version of the website, it's more. And if you buy it through the American version of the website, it's even more than that. So they're not checking. They're just scanning your ticket. So I don't know why they have – I Googled it, and a lot of people are very confused by why the pricing is different for different countries. And the thought is maybe they're trying to get people from Britain in over there a little more because – I guess if you live in London, it's an hour and a half or two for a train ride, I want to say is what I heard. So they're trying to get people from other parts than just Paris. So maybe there's more incentive there.
I would point out, too, is that you know, I know a lot of people from the UK, and a lot of them are podcasters and Disney fans, and they like almost never go to Disneyland Paris. They always go to Walt Disney World. Like, you know, so I don't, it's a weird thing. You think if it's so close, you would just go to the closest park, but
right. And if we lived there, we would definitely go there. You know, I will say though that there are a couple things that I think that they're being remedied. Anyway, the interesting thing with their Disney is that they're kind of set up more like Disneyland, meaning that they have their second park, which is called Disney Studios, directly next door to it.
Okay, like DCA.
So it's not like – yeah, it's like DCA where basically you can walk from one to the other. You're one – if you buy a park ticket, you get into both and you can hop around as much as you want. There's no – you have to buy the park hopper. There's none of that kind of stuff.
Wow, their attendance must not be very high then, right?
Not really. From what I understand, yeah, it's one of the lower rated parks. And they actually – their studio park, from what I've read online, is the lowest attended park that they have. So they have their parks, and then they have an area called Disney Town, which isn't huge.
Disney Village.
Or Disney Village, which is like their downtown Disney. It's not huge, but they do have their version of Medieval Times there. Hmm. Which is called Buffalo Bills.
So it's like Western?
It's a Western thing, but it was really good.
Do Medieval Times, but make it all Western themed, and that's what it is. And
you get
nice.
You get everybody, like you get all the main Disney characters in there. Now, the way that Mickey Mouse operates over there is Mickey Mouse always speaks entirely in French. But if he's speaking to somebody, that other person is going to say what they're saying in English. So if Mickey says something in like in the show or in a park and he says something in French, like Daisy Duck will say, "Why, yes, Mickey, I believe that it's a great idea to start celebrating Christmas now." So he's kind of they kind of parrot what they say. Another really weird aspect over there is that Goofy's name is Dingo. Over there.
Dingo?
Dingo. They call him Dingo.
Interesting.
They call Chip and Dale Tick and Tack. And they call Thumper Pan Pan.
Okay.
I think Goofy got lost in translation somewhere. So the you know, French translated version is Dingo. We actually got him to sign our autograph book. Goofy, and then in parentheses he put Dingo.
But then Chip and Dale signed it as Tick and Tack.
Yeah, they signed it as Tick and Tack, which was cool because when we went to Alani and we did a character dining, and Alani, Chip and Dale have different names, but they signed as Chip and Dale. Here they signed as Tick and Tack, and Thumper wrote Pan Pan. So we have this weird
Pan Pan. That sounds like an Asian Pan Pan name. That should have been one of the Asian parks.
I'm guessing Thumper doesn't translate either, so he's Pan Pan, which might mean Thump Thump for all we know.
So anyway, they have like on the side of it, they actually have like 5 or 6 hotels, like where within a walking distance, like it's kind of like in one complex where you exit the subway, which is the end of the line. And you go directly into the Disney complex. And that includes the hotels. And it turns out that the parking structure is actually built on top of the subway station. So it's kind of really neat on how compact it is. Mm. So anyway, just kind of getting that out of the way. The Buffalo Bill show is well worth it if you go out there. Mm-hmm. You get like a little rodeo clown in front of you kind of in each section. Like if you've ever done a Medieval Times type show, you cheer for your knight. Here you cheer for your cowboy. And it's based on your section that you're sitting in. And the section that we were sitting in, we had a really good rodeo clown who was walking barefoot on a ledge the whole time and like falling and catching himself. Pretty much you were looking at that saying you couldn't do that in America because of, you know, labor laws and union laws. So so anyway, they have 2 parks there. They have Disneyland Resort, and then they have the studio. So which park do you want us to talk about first?
Well, cool. We got to start Disneyland. You know, there's a few things in that park I'm looking forward to experiencing.
There's one thing that I know that you're definitely looking forward to experiencing.
Is of course, Phantom Manor.
Yes.
Which I have heard a lot about it. I've heard a lot about the backstory, and I've never watched a video because that's part of one of my things is that I like to experience these things firsthand. Not for the first time, I want to experience it in person, not on video. But it sounds like an incredible attraction. I know that also there's the dragon underneath the castle.
Yes, there is
that experience, which was designed by Imagineer Terry Harden, who I've got to hear the story of her pitching that and all that fun stuff, which I guess I think that was supposed to be on the podcast. I don't know. There was all these outtakes from her interview in Foolish Mortals that I was like, oh, I got to interview that, but I'll probably just bring on again. But anyways, what else was there? Just this is right off the top of my head.
Probably the Space Mountain that they have there.
Yeah, and then there's Indiana Jones coaster. Is that in the Studios Park?
No, they have an Indiana Jones coaster there.
Okay. And that Big Thunder is on an island.
Yes.
You know, so I think that's about all. Those are like the unique things that stand out that I want to experience.
Yeah, there are some other things, and we can kind of go into them. But we went there, and it was actually the 25th anniversary. And we went there for Christmas, and they really do Christmas very well there. Part of the reason why we went there for Christmas is because Christmas is that park is known to do Christmas very, very large. However, being that it's also with the 25th, they scaled down the Christmas, but they had all the Christmas colors, the colors of the 25th, so which is blue. So all the Christmas trees were bright blue and silver.
Hmm.
It's a very pretty park. Like when you get in and you see the castle, it's actually like built with a hill on the side and water features. So like if you watch the nighttime projection show, you have water fountains shooting high in the air at certain points. They don't do a whole lot of fireworks though. You know, if you live in the States, you're going to get the best fireworks out of anybody else or out of any other park. I would argue that the international parks maybe have better projection mapping, but we definitely have the best fireworks by and far.
Well, especially Walt Disney World. I mean, I feel like it's just nowhere near like anything else in the close.
Exactly. I've always thought Walt Disney World can get away with more with fireworks. They also have places they can launch from. So they can launch higher and more dramatic and not be in the middle of a city.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't really, you know, that would be a terrible story of, you know, Disney burns down Tokyo or Hong Kong. You know, like, yeah. that would just, they never recover from that. How do you have Tokyo, they just recovered from Godzilla attacking for the 75th time.
Right. Now there's a firework fire. Just can't win.
Yeah. So anyway, the dragon is very cool. It took a little while for us to figure out where it was. I don't think we figured out where the dragon was until, what, day three or so?
Really?
It wasn't... we had other things we had to do.
It's in the castle.
But you have to find the right passage.
You have to write... Yeah.
It's not marked.
There's not, like, a giant sign that says dragon this way anywhere. So there's different, like, paths underneath. One told you the story of Sleeping Beauty, wasn't it?
That took us through the castle.
Yeah,
that
it was took in the you castle. Like through the castle, and there was no dragon. And then we wound up like one route took you into a gift shop, no dragon. And then we stumbled across another path, and there he was.
So, oh wow, so that's kind of fun though. It's you can go do exploring, and you don't know what you're gonna come across.
Right, and it's not as well marked. I did like at one point I wandered like back outside and like under a waterfall that was part of the side of the castle, and that was kind of a cool spot if it wasn't, you know, freezing and water everywhere.
Oh yeah, it was 40 degrees the entire time. So if you go there for Christmas, bundle up, especially if you're a Floridian or a Californian and you're not really sure, you know, if you're not used to that kind of weather, it is a shock.
So I guess if you start on the very, like, if you go west in the park toward their version of Adventureland, they do not have a Jungle Cruise out there, which is kind of odd.
Oh, okay.
Because Hong Kong had one, Tokyo had one, and the States, we have two of them. You know, Shanghai does not yet, but that's kind of the one, like, that's kind of a glaring thing that we noticed is that there was no Jungle Cruise.
Oh, Discovery Land is what it's called, I believe.
Yeah, it's right? Discovery Land, not Adventure.
No, Discovery Land is Tomorrowland.
Is that Tomorrowland?
Okay. Oh, so what's Oh, no, they have Adventureland, my bad.
Yeah. They have Adventureland, it's in the back. No, you go to Frontierland, and it's set up like an old, Frontierland is on the very left. Mm-hmm. And it's set up like an old Wild West town, and that's where they have Thunder Mountain, where it is on an island, and you take a train under the water to get – it's kind of like you fly under the water, and then you're on the island right away. So it's kind of a cool dramatic effect.
That's fun.
Yeah, and you have their version of Mark Twain, which is called the Molly Brown, going around, but it's a lot less animatronic animals and stuff. We noticed as a little backstory, I guess in July, Walt Disney, the Disney company, had obtained full control of the park.
Oh, just this past July.
They did not have full control because the reason why you have a lot of people from Paris who don't even go to Disneyland Paris and they come over here in Europe is because they apparently let things get into really bad disrepair. So on a lot of rides and bathrooms and gift stores and random places, we had little electronic surveys that said, how was the quality of this experience? And it was like red, yellow, or green. So like I noticed that like some of the animals were like not moving. Or like I noticed the moose who had an ear falling off on the side. And it's kind of like things that you wouldn't really see over on the stateside parks or some of the international parks. But over there, you know, it's like a lot of little things that they let go, which unfortunately adds to a big part of the experience.
Right. Wow.
So,
but you also have to be paying attention to detail. He found the moose's ear along the side of the riverboat.
Yeah.
It's the animatronic moose that probably 25 years ago could turn his head.
Right. It's not like a glaring thing.
His ear is falling off.
But it's just it's one of those things I read that the Disney company is investing a ton of money to kind of get every little thing back up to where it should be. So that's good to see. You know, I just don't want them I don't want the Disney company taking full control of Tokyo because that place is too perfect. You know, so They can let the Oriental Land Company have that one. But, yeah, the Molly Brown, it's kind of funny because I don't know if you know the history of Molly Brown.
No, I have no idea, personally.
Okay, she was a pioneer woman who she found gold, and she was wealthy, and she eventually resided in Denver. But she has a nickname called the Unsinkable Molly Brown because she was on the Titanic.
Oh.
And she did not she didn't drown. She survived. So that's why she is unsinkable. So it's kind of weird that you would call a boat after somebody who was a Titanic survivor. Like, you know, just kind of a strange fact. But like right off in the distance is where Phantom Manor is. And that ride on the exterior is gorgeous. It's an old it looks like an abandoned Western building. It's the only Haunted Mansion type building where it looks like it's abandoned, you know, because every other Haunted Mansion looks like pristine and brand new.
Mm-hmm.
So this one, it looks abandoned, and I don't know how much you want us to talk about this ride or not.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really want to talk about it too much. Sorry for people, because I know that it has a completely different story. I know that so I know lots of trivia about it, you know, as being the Haunted Mansion documentary guy, but sometimes depending on, and this might happen throughout the park, as you guys may or may not be able to tell me, but depending on how many English speakers as opposed to French speakers are there, as well change the language of the ride to. I have no idea how they determine that, but
we experienced that on one attraction out of the other park. But yeah, you're right on that.
They can, it was one of the rides in Disney Studios. The cast member came out and she called out six different languages. And then she said, because I do understand quite a bit of French, she said, French is the winner. I'm putting English on the subtitle screen.
Oh, wow.
She came out and assessed, basically, raise your hand if you speak French, raise your hand if you speak English, raise your hand if you speak Italian. And I know she's Spanish and German, and I want to say maybe the last one was Japanese. So I'm thinking there is a greeter when you go into the first room in Phantom Manor, and he is probably... He's just standing by the door saying hello to people, and he's probably the one figuring that out.
Oh, interesting. But the thing I was going to say about it, though, was that it's not the case anymore, and I used to know why. But when the attraction first opened, when it was in English, Vincent Price was doing the narration.
Yeah, I had heard about that.
Which is, I mean, that's incredible. Think about Vincent Price as the ghost host.
You know, like, right, yeah. I mean, if there was ever a role for him that he was built for, you know, that was it.
But I will
say, in understanding French, I think it's the same speech in the stretching room in French.
So, you know, it's about the bride. The whole ride is about the bride.
Yeah.
And it's got a Western bent to it. The ride follows a very similar format, kind of like with the same type of scenes, but with different decorations and different spirits. I'll say this much, that, you know, I know that I had mentioned to you on how there, it's funny on how there's no skeletons in the Haunted Mansion. That's because this one has all of them. So
they all live in Paris together.
Okay.
So, the other odd aspect with this, not only odd, but just, they are getting ready for they're in it now, but, they are doing a very, very long extended refurb of the ride, like meaning like a year and a half from what I read.
Yeah, I thought it was 9 months, a year and a half. Wow.
It might be 9 months. It could be a year and a half. I'm not sure what they're doing to it, but I do know that we went on it twice because, you know, there's so much to see. And on the second day, we noticed that a lot of the things that were working on the first time were staying very stationary, like skeletons that were moving to begin with were staying still. So I think it's just, that's another thing where it's just like, they got to kind of go in and get into the bones of the whole, pardon the pun, of the whole thing. And like, and I'm thinking of the other thing that I noticed with the ride, and not being a spoiler at all, but there were several areas where you go through and there's nothing going on and you're just going through by a black wall for, you know, 10 seconds or so. So I noticed that there's a lot of empty space on the ride. So I'm hoping that maybe they do something with that to kind of flesh it out a little bit more.
Yeah, for example, if you took the California version of the Haunted Mansion where you have the Hatbox Ghost,
mm-hmm.
in California is black dead space. Phantom Manor.
Just not, it's kind of like that in Walt Disney World. Really, there's nothing there either, right? And not that I recall.
Yeah, nothing. But the more so here, where it's like you're going by walls. But I don't
know. It's a noticeable period of black space, and I think
in several spots. Yeah,
and part of the reason I think we noticed it more the second time through, if you've ever been on any of the Haunted Mansion, because it's how the ride loads, you will occasionally stop. On the Haunted Mansion when they're loading people.
Right, for the wheelchair. Yeah, people.
Yeah, so you'll wind up slowing to a stop at some point in the ride. That happened to us a couple times the second time through, and one of those we got stopped in a period of nothing. And that's when I realized, I was like, wow, this ride actually does have quite a few spots where you actually can't see anything, and that would be in California, right about where the Hatbox Ghost was.
Okay, I got you.
So my guess is something is going to go in some of those dead spaces because they were pretty noticeable.
Yeah, my guess is because they're doing something for this long of a period of time that they're revamping it rather than just, you know, saying, oh, well, let's just fix everything. I think they're going to be adding a lot more to it because it's kind of like, it was a big thing that we noticed that people were talking about out there is how long that this is going to be down and that they were very excited to see what was going to happen when they came back.
Well, let's hope it all wasn't a whole bunch of nothing. Hopefully they bring some fun stuff into there.
I would say that this would be the only ride in the Haunted Mansion family that I would think twice before bringing a kid on.
Yeah.
I would think about the kid and what they could tolerate, whereas I don't think that about any of the other ones.
So this is some pretty scary moments in here then, huh?
Darker. There's more exposed rotting flesh in this ride.
Ooh, lovely.
Without revealing anything, but we were stopped in front of a zombie dog when the ride was unloading. And when the lightning flashed, you could definitely see some gruesome details on it.
Wow. I mean, I can't wait to one day get to to this park just
at one point, Grant made a comment. He goes, James would be so disappointed in us. We didn't get to Haunted Mansion until like 8 o'clock the first night. Like we went at night for the first time.
Oh, you know, that's more atmospheric. It's fine.
You know, I will say this was my favorite Haunted Mansion family ride to take photos of.
Of the outside.
Of the outside. I mean, the only photo I took on the inside was the second time through when we were stuck for a minute. I was like, well, we're stuck here. So I took a photo. But the outside, I had a lot of fun taking photos of it in the dark. It does have a little graveyard attached to it. Not like I'm blanking on California, but not like Walt Disney World, where the queue at the beginning has the cemetery and it has like the interactive portion.
Yeah.
This doesn't have that at all. But when you leave, you can go like back out into Frontierland area, or you can walk through this little cemetery area.
And you could touch some of the graves and they would like, you'd feel the heart beating and stuff.
So kind of to a lesser extent what Florida has. But, like, they have the different graves that had, like, the funny sayings and stuff on it were over there.
And a pet cemetery as well.
Yeah.
Oh, what's funny is you mentioned the Vincent Price thing. Mm-hmm. That's how the cast members were acting on this one. Mm-hmm. Was they were acting kind of, like, goofy, scary, like, sneaking behind and, like, laughing maniacally. What? So when, like, you'd be in the room, they would, like – and the other thing is – they wouldn't start the stretching room scene until everybody was completely quiet.
Wow.
So I have to give them some major props for that. And I will say that the stretching room portraits are very, very different.
I looked all over Disneyland. I was very disappointed. They need, what's ours, Memento Mori. They need that gift shop in Paris. They have no Phantom Manor
merchandise. Like, we couldn't find anything.
I have
nothing.
A pin.
Wow.
That was all I could find was a pin. And it was a pin of what the facade of the building. But the stretching room images are different. Similar, but different and really cool. And I know in Disney World, if I wanted a pin or a print of any of the stretching room ones, they're all over Disney World. I want the ones of Phantom Manor, and I cannot find them anywhere. And I was very disappointed. There's no gift shop even near Haunted Mansion. I trekked us all over Frontierland. And every gift shop, he was looking, I was looking. I'm like, they have nothing for Phantom Manor. Out of everything, I found a pin.
Wow.
Their attire that the cast members wear is
for different. Winter was really cool. They were like wearing top hats and stuff. So
they have really cool winter wear. I'm assuming that's not what these people have to wear in the summer. Otherwise, I feel really bad. But their winter wear was like formal wear. It was really cool. And whereas you see like the Haunted Mansion costume, you can buy different things of that all over. You can't find anything about their costumes or anything.
Disneyland Paris. It's probably because they make the other Haunted Mansion stuff. They sell it at multiple parks. And Phantom Manor stuff's so unique, they're too cheap to make merchandise for one park.
We saw a lot of Mystic Manor stuff. Hmm. But maybe I'm wondering if this has to do with the fact that Disney has finally regained control. If maybe it was like, because we noticed that the gift stores there were all selling very generic merchandise in every store. Like nothing really, very little stuff specific to the attraction.
Oh, okay.
So I'm wondering if that was one of those things that was part of the deal, you know, like where maybe the other company that was, whoever owned Disneyland Paris partly before then, wasn't necessarily keeping up and was doing the bare minimum, you know?
Yeah. The only ride I can think of that I saw a lot of ride-specific merchandise for is Pirates.
Yeah, but that's Pirates, and though, Pirates, because you have that everywhere.
You get, that's, you know, still that is kind of generic Disney, but that was the only ride I can think of that they had a gift shop that the merchandise was really dedicated to it.
Let's venture over to Adventureland. You brought up Pirates.
Is there
some major differences there? I know they're about to get a refurb, but
Their Pirates is very different. You start off it's like the reverse of the Disneyland, so you start out in the burning building.
Weird.
And you start by going uphill. You do the drops throughout the ride. So, like, the first thing you do is actually go up the waterfall.
Interesting.
And then, like, the ride ends with you in the caverns with the skeletons. So it's like the regular version of Pirates with a couple little different scenes. But for the most part, it's kind of like a reorganized version of Pirates of the Caribbean. And we did see we got to experience the new version of the redhead scene.
Oh, it's already there?
Yeah, they were the first ones to do it. And I will say,
why did I never hear about this? When did this open there?
They redid theirs
5 or 6 months ago.
It opened before the 25th. I think it opened with the 25th anniversary celebration. They took the Paris Pirates down for several months. I want to say it opened either with the 25th or right after the 25th anniversary celebration. We came into it. I was like, whoa, I see the future here. And
I'll say it works very, very, very well. It's not missing anything.
Yeah, she is still the redhead.
And she's
very
still,
much front and
just,
center.
They just made her a pirate. They're just robbing everybody.
Yeah.
So it's not like they're. So it works.
She is herself. She's gun wielding. That's really the change is she's got a gun in each hand. And it works. They didn't really change. I mean, her outfit is different, but it's not modest. It's no different than really what she was wearing. I think it might actually be more pants.
And,
more of a pirate outfit.
You still have, like, the group of people crying behind because they're losing all their possessions because the pirates are auctioning off all their merchandise.
Yeah. Basically, she's robbing everybody. She's, like, really looks like the lead pirate robbing everybody. So the redhead
got
a good job.
It works.
She has a good career now.
A good career.
But I'll say that this one is more in line with the Disneyland Pirates as far as length.
Mm-hmm.
And this one has two drops versus our really wimpy one over here in Florida, which I kind of wish they would just tear it down and do something different with it, you know?
Well, if I'm mistaken, Florida is supposed to be the next one the redhead gets the gun in, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think
that's going to be up in a few weeks, I think.
I think it's in refurb right now.
Oh, okay.
But I think it went down right after Christmas was going.
You know, you've been to both parks. You've been to these. And you know that the Florida one is way inferior compared to the Disneyland Pirates.
Oh, yeah. It was
a slap job. It was a rush job. And while there's a few nice elements to it, it's really – it's a very quick ride, and I'd rather them – maybe even bring over the Shanghai version over here.
Yeah.
Frankly,
the Shanghai is the superior pirates. Something really cool, the Walt Disney World Railroad at Disneyland Paris goes through the back of pirates. So for a few scenes, you cannot tell from inside pirates. The train is actually above the ride, but when you're on the train, you can actually see into part of pirates and see some of these scenes with skeletons from the train.
Well, that's kind of cool.
So, yeah, I was not expecting that. It's also their pirates is in the very back of the park, whereas I'm going to say in most parks it tends to be, at least in ours, it's toward the side.
Tokyo, it's the very first thing you see, like the very first attraction.
Yeah, it's pirates.
But
this one's in the very back of the park, so when the train is going around the back, where you, like in Florida, you see like the wildlife and the Native Americans and the teepees and stuff, theirs is going through the back of pirates.
So, yeah, it's kind of neat. You know, it's cool seeing the differences.
They also have, I don't think it has the same name, but they also have a restaurant that you can eat in that's along the beginning of the ride.
Like Blue Bayou, but not, yeah.
It's not Blue Bayou, but it's the same
idea. It's like a Jack Sparrow restaurant.
Yeah.
So their Adventureland has two other big attractions there. They have the Indiana Jones and the Temple of Peril roller coaster. Right. And if you want to know what that's like, just listen to our Tokyo Disney Sea episode, because it's the exact same ride as Mystic Spirits, which is just like an outdoor steel roller coaster, you know, with some nice theming. But the ride actually it shook us up. It's kind of a jolty and shaky one. And Brittany and I, we both kind of got off of it and said, well, we conquered that. We don't need to do this again.
Yeah, it was a one and done. Yeah.
Yeah, it does have a 360 loop in it.
So
just because some people don't do those. Yes, it does have a loop in it. It's completely outdoors. Has a really nice fire ambiance, which is really nice when you're going on that at 9 o'clock at night in December.
So
it's warm.
I was like, hey, cool. This is a warm ride. I'll stay over here.
So the other really nice thing that they have there is something that used to be at Disneyland, but I never experienced it as a kid. Which was they had the Skull Rock area.
Oh, where yeah.
Where if you've looked at old Disneyland photos, they have that.
That was in Fantasyland.
Yeah, this is in their Adventureland. It's their version of Tom Sawyer's Island. And it's kind of a cool looking place to like climb around, and it's their version of Tom Sawyer. So you can climb through the skull and climb up the skull. So kind of nice. You probably would have done a little bit more of that had it not been for the fact that it was 40 degrees.
And a little drizzly.
Right. And just some perspective, you know, you guys live in Florida, so, you know, and I live in Southern California, so 40 degrees is not tolerable. But I was just in the Northeast where it was 10 degrees, so some people were maybe like, you know, 40 degrees they could deal with when it's 10 degrees outside. But
yeah, no, for us, we came home and we had our coldest weather in several years, and I think it was 39 degrees here. And we broke record cold at 39 on a few days here. So 40 and is a shocker. Yeah, I was bundled. I looked like a little Eskimo.
This episode of Creepy Kingdom has been brought to you by League of Shadows. This is an Etsy shop that specializes in paranormal and creepy-inspired jewelry, including a Haunted Mansion Parasol Girl necklace. Just go to Etsy.com/shop/League of Shadows. That's Etsy.com/shop/League of Shadows.
Coming around, you get Fantasyland, and I'll just kind of breeze through that. So you have your Peter Pan flight, which is pretty much the same thing. Mm-hmm. You have your Dumbo, which is pretty much the same thing. Your Mad Hatter teacups, same thing. you have Pinocchio, which is the same thing, although Geppetto gets his own little special area. And this one, I did your Blue Fairy trick.
Yes, we turned around and
turned around, looked at the creepy. Yeah,
yes, we did.
Just standing there, and it's like
he mentioned that when we were in the queue. He's like, "Yeah, there's a point where James, like, you turn around and you just see this creepy blue fairy staring down." So at that point in the ride, we both turned around and we're like, "Whoa."
Yeah,
right. That's terrifying.
Just to be clear, just for listeners, so on Pinocchio's Daring Journey, which is only at Disneyland and Disneyland Paris, there's a Pepper's Ghost. Oh, it's there too? Okay, I don't know. But there's a Pepper's Ghost effect towards the end of the ride where the blue fairy is a ghost and you could see through her and talking to Pinocchio, and then she disappears by the time you catch up. So since it's Pepper's Ghost, you're looking at glass and you're seeing a reflection of her. So once you get to that point where Pinocchio is, you don't see her anymore. If you turn around, you could just see her just standing there in the dark. And it is one of the creepiest bone chilling things. I don't know why. The first time I thought of it, I was like, I'm going to turn around and see if I could see her. And, you know, and then I saw her.
And like, you were not disappointed.
No. Very creepy.
We all did that, and that was, we got a good kick out of
Unfortunately,
that.
I'm never going to be able to ride that ride and not do that from now on. The ride itself is already dark enough.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, just add this grim, like.
And that's, like, the one scene that's, like, all, like, happy. Right? Everything else in the ride is, like, you know, peril at every corner.
We turned around and we did that too.
So, next to that, in the same building, is Blanche Neige et Sept. Nine.
Your French is beautiful.
I sat there this whole time going, no one's ever going to understand Grant. I don't know why I didn't understand him. What he thinks he said was Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. What he actually said was probably very offensive.
So, that's pretty much the same ride. However,
same ride as Disneyland's or same ride as Walt Disney World's that used to be there?
I never went on the Disney World version.
Oh, okay.
And but
the Disney World one has unfortunately become a very faded memory to me. I know I rode it a few times, but I can't remember it. It's now the Princess Meet and Greet here. And
there's the one thing that was different, because I can tell you that we've been on it in Tokyo as well. I just looked. Pinocchio is in Tokyo as well. But the weird thing with this ride is when it, like, you go through and it's like cartoony Snow White in the first couple scenes, you know, like how she looks in the cartoon.
Yeah.
And then at the very end when you're leaving, you get these, like, very, like, awkward, like, really, like, barely working animatronics that look like mannequin, like human mannequin versions of the prince, who looks like 20 years older and like 1980s David Hasselhoff. And Snow White, who looks like she's been like drugged. And the thing is you go from cartoony looking to human-esque looking, like meaning a lot more realistic version of it. And it's very jarring. Especially with the very limited motion that they have in their hands, like.
But they are working animatronics. They are moving. They just don't move as much as most animatronics do nowadays.
But it's just very, very creepy because the whole ride is in like a totally different art style. Like it looks like the cartoon. And here it's looking like a live action movie. So it's kind of like, it takes you like, what the heck did I just look at? You know, What am I looking at? It's really like, I think you saw the photos that I put up in the Citizens page.
Of the Snow White one. I don't remember.
Yeah, Snow White.
I should probably.
If you didn't, we will get a photo because I have one. It was, I feel like someone worked really hard to make these animatronics. And somebody said, that's perfect, we'll put them at the end of this ride. And they don't exactly fit in, but they use them anyway. And they are rather creepy looking. They don't look like.
Oh, I see them now. Yeah.
After.
Yeah, I was I was traveling a lot. Yeah, I was traveling a lot during the holidays. I missed this when you actually posted it.
But yeah, you see what I mean on how it looks very different compared to like how she looks in the normal, you know, ride.
Yeah, we'll put these in the show notes. This might even be the episode photo because this is super creepy.
Yeah,
isn't that like
no? They'll look
unnerving.
No. If you look for a video, like find a video. And look for the movement that they make, and it makes it even more unnerving because it's like it looks like they're like coming out of like Requiem for a Dream or something. So but you know the witch is in it. She still has the same like apple effect where you know like it's like a Pepper's Ghost type effect, the hologram thing.
Yeah.
So. Anyway, there's also a really unique attraction in Fantasyland, which is the Alice in Wonderland maze.
Yeah, that was one of the things I wanted to ask you about. That's something that's only there. So what do you guys think about the Alice in Wonderland maze?
Shanghai has a version of the maze, but it's themed to the Tim Burton version.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, this is the classic style, but I could see in there how they did the Shanghai version, and they just did it to the newer modern version.
Yeah, I mean, some of the castles and the things that you can climb up to, they're really pretty. Once again, this is probably an attraction that we would have enjoyed more in fairer weather.
Mm-hmm. We did walk through the whole thing. At different points, like at one point, the Queen of Hearts, like, jumps out at you and yells off with your head in French. That's kind of fun.
Is it animatronic or a person?
It's an animatronic.
It's an animatronic. It is what I noticed. I don't want to say it's on a motion sensor, but I think it's timed because there's a lot of people in the maze. And, you know, some of them are in big groups. I noticed she would jump up at points, but other people would go by and she wouldn't jump up. There were also some of her guards would jump up at different points, but I think it was on a timer, so you might have missed it if you weren't in the right place at the right time. But if it was on a motion sensor, she'd be like springboard all day long and it would probably lose its thrill.
Right.
So yeah, it's a cool little attraction. We did it one time because it's kind of like once you see it, you're good.
Mm-hmm. It has a really big Cheshire cat face in the back of it. You can see the Cheshire cat from all different like points in the park. But it is neat. You can walk up in her castle. But I will say, though, when you walk up in her castle and look down, you can see the mechanisms and how the queen and the guards jump out. You can – yeah.
That's a bad show.
I'm also going to mention a couple quick things about what we noticed with Disney Paris in general, which is everybody smokes there, even in the non-smoking area. So if you're a non-smoker, like just everybody's walking around and in line just smoking and lighting it up and – you can see where some cast members are trying to stop it, but most aren't because it's too big of an issue. Smoking is so popular out there. So I'm just kind of like, I like warning people like, hey, if you're really sensitive, just, you know, maybe wear a face mask or something. Mm-hmm. The other thing that we notice is that the France in general is much more leisurely than here in America. So, we noticed that the ride loading times are not always correct. So you would get in line for a ride and it would say 40 minutes and it would be closer to an hour.
Whereas we tend to
they take their time setting quicker. People, putting people in the ride and, oh, we're going to, you know, like they kind of joke around with people versus over here. It's like you're on and you're off. You're on, you're on, you're off.
Yeah.
I don't think they have – I know at least stateside – there's an expectation of like how many boats go through on Pirates and how many boats go through on Small World. Here, they don't, I don't think they have that. I think they can just, you know, send them through at the pace they want because it was very, lots of the rides were very slow loading.
Now, I think that that's something that may be changing with the gradual changing of the guard that's going on right now. And that's probably why they're asking ranking and stuff.
While I'm thinking of it, I'm going to bring this up. Something that is different with Disneyland Paris from all other Disneylands, their fast pass window is 30 minutes.
Oh, yeah. That was strange.
Wow. So that's something when you think leisurely and slower and getting in lines and lines being longer than you expect. You have a 30-minute fast pass window there on the paper fast pass. And the first one he brought back, I said, wow, that's 30 minutes.
That seems like the opposite of leisurely. Seems like the opposite of leisurely. That seems stressful.
It does, and that's what kind of you have to think about it because you have a shorter window. So when we're thinking of shows and parade times, when he was going to get fast passes, like, well, watch, because if that's a 30-minute show, you can't get your fast pass close to that time. So that's something to keep in mind when we're talking about how, like, they take longer to load the boats and stuff. You do have to mentally be more aware about your fast passes here.
So anyway, wow. Back to Fantasyland. I thought it would be kind of a nice little quick segue.
Yeah. So then they have their Tomorrowland, right, which we messed up before, Discoveryland,
quick,
right?
Quick couple things about Fantasyland. Oh, really sure. Quick couple things. Is they have their Casey Jr. That's the baseball player.
I know.
they have the Casey Jr. train ride, but it's much more like a roller coaster. It's a rollicking train ride, like kind of like the beginning of Dumbo.
They have a bar, like on your Thunder Mountain seats, have a bar. Yeah, Casey Jr.'s got a bar when you get
in. Wow, not quite like that in Disneyland.
And then they have their canal boats, but they're not narrated.
They're just out there.
They're just out there, and you just ride them. Mm-hmm. And their Small World was the same as it's very similar.
The only difference I will say that was really noticeable with Small World, they do holiday, so they were in their Christmas mode. Like Disneyland, they do some of the characters. For example, Marie from the Aristocats is in the Disneyland Paris version in France. She's also in the Hong Kong one. I don't think she's actually in California.
No, I don't think so.
No, she's not in California, but she was in Hong Kong. But instead of looking like the animated character, she looks like a real cat. So she's in there, but she's in there more in a humanized form. Aladdin and Jasmine and Ariel were like that as well.
It's kind of creepy. So,
yeah, less animated version, more humanized, but still looking like the It's a Small World dolls. So if you didn't know to look for the characters, you would miss them in this one.
So, their version of Tomorrowland, it's called Discoveryland. And they only have a few attractions. They have the exact same version of the rockets that you guys have in California.
And the same style, because the whole style of the land is like Jules Verne instead of the white retro futuristic versions the other ones are.
Which is funny because you can see where Tokyo Disney Sea took some inspiration for their Forbidden Island area from their Discovery Land because it's very Jules Verne-ian. Mm. So they have a Buzz Lightyear ride, which is it's different scenes, but they all kind of play the same. You know, and they have Autopia, and that's, you know, just another waste of space, of course. I always think that Autopia needs to go. They have Star Tours, and it's the adventures continue, and it's in French. So C-3PO works shockingly well in French.
He's an amazing Frenchman, and now I'm kind of disappointed he's not French everywhere.
So, but they have two big different attractions there.
Okay.
So the first one is Space Mountain.
It says Space Mountain Mission 2 is the title.
No, this is Hyper Space Mountain right now because they're doing Star Wars.
I'll look at a little map then.
Yeah, they remain in Hyper Space Mountain. I think Hyper Space Mountain stays through their 25th.
So their Space Mountain, you have an overhead bar on you.
You go upside down, huh?
Yeah, this one flips you, and it launches you up into the mountain. Not very quickly, but you do get launched. And with the Star Wars theming, it kind of is cool, like you're going into hyperspace.
Yeah.
With the launch, you know, they time it nicely, so it feels like you're going in there as the music's playing from Star Wars.
Well, that's
you
fun.
Load outside under an overhang, of course. It's not like outside, but you load technically outside of the Space Mountain structure. And the launch is what connects you to these traditionally shaped Space Mountain building that you're familiar with.
Yeah, because it look if you Google it, it looks very much Jules Vernian. It's very steampunky.
Hmm. Okay. I wonder why they went that direction and why they called it Discoveryland instead of Tomorrowland. But
because they were going the Jules Verne route. But what's weird is this is the one Space Mountain that you go on that you load outside.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it looks like you're being launched from a cannon. That's the idea, is that you're going from a cannon into Space Mountain.
As you go through the queue, you see the different, like, images on the wall, and it's like a blueprint, and you see that it's a cannon launching you into space. So, it makes more sense when you're in the queue why it looks like a cannon and things like that.
Sadly, yeah. I mean, I would have liked to have seen what it actually looked like inside without the Star Wars overlay, since I had never done it. But it was still fun, you know. It did flip us a few times. So it's a much more intense version of Space Mountain, which is kind of cool.
All right. Flip it in the dark. Sounds
and neat. The other unique attraction there is the Mysteries of the Nautilus, where... Mm. It's a walkthrough that takes you through 20,000 leagues under the sea.
Wow, that's crazy, because that actually was at Disneyland like years ago.
The walkthrough?
Yeah, walkthrough of 20,000. Yeah, like when the movie came out.
So, really?
Yeah. So that's interesting that they decided to put that here like so many years later.
Yeah, you get. Like a glimpse of, what is it, this giant squid, like he kind of shows up as they're walking through. So there's a couple good little creepy moments in there.
Yeah, 20,000 Leagues. I'm surprised they haven't remade that movie.
Right.
Wait for it, I'm sure.
Yeah, they're working on it.
Starring Justin Bieber.
Starring Justin Bieber, yeah. America's sweetheart.
Oh God.
Anyways, what else is going on there? I wanted to ask you about. Oh, I see that they have "Honey, I Shrunk the Audience" still alive there. Unless that's gone. Oh, it is gone. Oh, okay, I was just joking. What's there? Because is there a 3D movie there?
There's nothing there right now. It's a Star Wars launch bay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Became your Meet Chewbacca area. I think that's what's there now. Is Meet Your Star Wars Characters. To wrap up Disneyland Park, they do have a 25th anniversary parade going now. When we were there, they also had a Christmas parade that ran twice a day, and then the 25th anniversary parade. I am very impressed with their parades. I really liked the 25th costumes that they had all the characters in. I wish they did more of it with the merch. The merchandise really focused on Mickey and Minnie and less on the other characters, who all had nice outfits in the parade. As for shows, they had...
It was just some Christmassy type
mostly
shows.
Mostly just Christmassy shows. They did a really good show with Stitch, where basically if you translated it out of French, they had to teach poor Stitch what Christmas was. Santa uses a sleigh, not a surfboard. Elvis songs aren't Christmas carols and stuff like that, because poor Stitch in his alien land missed Christmas, I guess. I don't know.
So that's it for Disneyland. We will say, before we kind of move on to our other park, which will not take nearly as long to talk about.
Oh, no, I have some thoughts.
Okay. We did do a couple of really cool dinings. The first one that we did was a princess dining inside of Disneyland. It's like the Cinderella diner. But the fun thing was Ariel was walking around, and the main thing, the appetizer that I ordered were head-on prawns.
Oh,
I got a photo of me putting those prawns in my mouth as Ariel watched in horror.
You posted that in our group too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At first, Ariel was like, oh, no, that's terrible. And then so they took a normal photo and she goes, wait, put the prawn in your mouth. Let's do this. And like she thought, then she thought about it. This is a great idea for a photo. So there's Grant in another country traumatizing a princess.
So
I have to say that is one of the least looking like Ariels I've ever seen.
Yeah. Well, the nice thing is, though, with like Belle and some of the other ones who are more French.
Mm-hmm.
Is that they actually spoke French. Okay. So that was kind of cool.
Now, I will say I was very impressed. The table next to us at the dining were Spanish-speaking. So while in that restaurant, all four princesses spoke French, English, and Spanish very well. Wow. So kudos to Disneyland Paris that they are, you know, multilingual.
So... the other interesting dining we did was a very specialty thing at the Hotel New York, which is one of their hotels attached, which is their Merry Christmas dinner. And it was a specialty character dinner where they have like foie gras, which is really weird because Donald Duck's all over the place there.
And I think he asked Donald why they were serving it.
Yeah, I did. And Donald just kind of shook his head.
And, poor Donald.
It was a cool dining experience. It was like a really swanky thing. The other thing with Paris is that they're going to charge you $10 for a bottle of water. It's like a giant glass bottle that you share between two of you, and every place did that. So we weren't really expecting that. They don't have tap water out there, apparently. So anyway, we did this dining experience where it was pretty much just the standard characters, but they did have Launchpad McQuack out there. Mm. So we basically paid several hundred dollars to meet Launchpad McQuack is how we viewed it.
Yeah. we also, he met with Scrooge. Scrooge McDuck is oddly very popular out there. He had a standing meeting point. So the three characters you meet up in the front of Disneyland Park, Marie, Pan-Pan, Thumper, and Scrooge. So that's one that in Florida, you get Scrooge at the Christmas party, and that's the only place you'll find him. They took Marie out of Disney World completely, and I think you can find Thumper at Animal Kingdom maybe on certain days. But he's more popular out there, so he had very nice Christmas attire. He met in all red and green.
So anyway, yeah, it was Christmas, so everybody is Christmassy. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I guess we're going to move on to Hollywood Studios. Honey, do I have a bottle of scotch?
Well, it's not going to well, Disney's Disney Studios.
He spent the whole trip calling it Hollywood Studios. Like, it's still not Hollywood Studios.
So
It has, I think, less than Hollywood Studios.
I'm going to preface this right now saying it is the most maligned park that Disney has, and it's kind of like, I'm sure you, as a Disney fan, have heard the that it's kind of like a really outdated place already.
Yeah, I haven't heard much good about it. I know they have a few unique attractions.
It was terrible. I hate to say it. It was like a cement it's an ugly park. You enter in through a giant, giant soundstage. So it's very claustrophobic in there because they have stores left and right. They do have the Earful Tower out front, which is kind of cool. And, you know, it's like I didn't think any park could be any worse than Hollywood Studios here in Florida, you know, other than the fact that they have the Aerosmith ride and Tower of Terror. But, you know, like you've been here recently, you know that Hollywood Studios out here is kind of an outdated thing. But it's transitioning right now. They're adding a bunch of stuff to it.
Yeah, it's definitely – and I also want to say, too, Hollywood Studios has gotten a bad rap, mostly because, you know, there's not a lot to do there.
There's four rides there currently.
But I love the old Hollywood, you know, area, and I love hanging out. I love the design of it, and you know, I still enjoy going there, and it does have the world's best – Tower of Terror.
Yeah.
So I mean, as a, you know, it's not a, you know, would I want to drop a 1 day park ticket to go there? You know, probably not. You know, but
they have only four rides there right now.
Yeah, so that's kind of rough. But you know, I overall, Hollywood Studios is, I enjoy it a lot. But compared to this place, as an overall theme, it's supposed to be studios, but you guys are saying this looks kind of bland. It doesn't really do anything.
Oh, it's like a cement paradise. You know, it's like, you could tell that they have like bushes and trees in it as like an afterthought. But I was just like, man, there's like nowhere to explore in this park. I pointed out, Brittany, they had a Christmas stage set up. I said, if this stage wasn't here, this would just be a wall of cement that we'd be looking at, like, you know, for like 300 feet in each direction.
Oh, wow.
So there's like no exploration to be had there. And on top of that, the theming, like, there's no real set theme to the park. Like, they have different neighborhoods called like Toon Studio and Production Courtyard. Nothing has to do with anything. Like, the back lot, it's all very, other than like the Ratatouille area and the Toy Story area, it's like they have an Aladdin thing right next to a Crush thing, which is right next to a stage. And there's no set, and which is right next to a Cars attraction. And they say, well, this is animation. But that's such a vague thing that, like, you could do that with anything with Disney. You could say, well, this is animation area in Fantasyland, you know?
Right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. They have Radiator Springs. It consists of a sign that says, welcome to Radiator Springs, and a ride.
Well, what is their Cars ride? I never even heard of this before.
Oh, it's pretty much the same thing as the Luigi. No, it's more like the Tomator thing.
It's like a spinner.
Yeah, think of your Tomator ride, but instead of them all being Mater looking, they're all different cars.
So no Radiator Springs Racers going
no,
on over
no,
there.
No, it's just this one little area that's about the size of our house.
Yeah.
And we don't have a very big house.
No. So, yeah, it was one ride.
It's very nicely themed, that one little area.
Yeah, but I mean, it wasn't much.
Right across the street of it is their version of the flying carpets of Aladdin, because why not? And the theme is that Genie is making a movie where you're filming the carpet sequence.
Okay.
Like, you're going against the back lot, like, but the weird thing is that he has a camera, but he's not pointing toward the carpet. He's pointing out into, like, the walkways.
He's fun around.
Let's see, they do have a really good attraction next to it, though, which is the Crush Coaster.
Yeah, I've heard great things about this one.
Well, that's great, and there's a reason why it has like an 80-minute wait, because it's one of the two really good attractions in the park.
Yeah, it has a very long wait. For the life of me, I do not understand. The Crush Coaster has no fast pass. However, the Magic Carpets of Aladdin, which was a walk-on every time we were there, has a fast pass. I'm like, can you guys just like switch that fast pass thing? It's right there. Just make that one for Crush. They do have a single rider option for a lot of rides, which is good, but the one for Crush would close because the single rider line got too long.
So it is surprising. Like, it's basically a fairground spinner. It's a very elaborately themed spinning roller coaster. Like, think a bigger version of, if you've been to Animal Kingdom, the Dinorama spinning roller coaster.
Primeval World.
But a bigger version of it. But it's incredibly well themed on the inside. And it's much more intense. We were kind of surprised by how quick this thing moved and how steep the drops were. So the ride was great. We only did that one time though, because the line was so long.
We
were there for 4 days.
Yeah, we got in line a second time because it said it was only an hour, and we figured, well, we'd wait for an hour, but I saw where we were in the queue and where we were in the queue the first time when it said it was an hour. And I told him, I said, this has got to be about a 2 hour wait. And it was getting toward the end of the night and they have a night show we wanted to go see. And I knew if we did it, we were going to be in that for the duration of the time in the park. They need to work. At no point in 4 days did I ever see them give out like in Florida, they give out like this little lanyard you bring up to the front and they scan it when you get to the front of the ride. Yeah, that's kind of how they do the timing.
Yeah, that's how they track it. Yeah.
None of that here. So I think they're doing it on like guesstimating and it's not very accurate.
They don't do that in Disneyland now that I think about it. I've only had those lanyards in Florida. I don't know how they
do it. Okay, that's Florida.
Yeah. I don't know how they do it in Disneyland.
I feel like we were given one in Hong Kong. We did that.
So let's see. They also do have a giant sorcerer's hat like what we had in front of the studios for so long.
No, it's not as big as the sorcerer hat that studios have, but they do have a sorcerer's hat still. Looks more like the one you see when you're entering Disneyland Hotel from Downtown Disney.
Oh, okay.
About that sized one in the middle of their park.
So let's see. They do have a little Toy Story area, which is the same thing as what's in Hong Kong, which is basically a little spinner ride, a parachute drop ride, and a half pipe roller coaster.
Hmm. No Midway Mania or anything like that.
It's a very small, very, very small Toy Story area. But right next to that is the Ratatouille area. And that's the other highlight of this park. There are two highlights of this whole park. They do have a nice stage show. I'll put that in there. They do have a really good stage show inside in the theater. But the Ratatouille ride, which is coming to Florida.
Yep, to Epcot.
Going in France at Epcot soon.
It's a trackless vehicle system, but it's a 3D movie ride. So unfortunately, one of my big things is I'm not a big fan of the 3D movie rides because I feel like that's kind of like a universal thing in general. Mm-hmm. And I would have really loved I'm not going to ruin the ride for you. I will say that there are some kind of nice, creepy moments where people are trying to kill the rats for being in the kitchen. But I would have preferred there to be some animatronics of the rats, you know, like some giant animatronics. Because the idea is that you've been shrunk down to the size of a rat. So you're kind of like seeing everything from their perspective. And attached to it is the Remy restaurant, the Ratatouille restaurant, which your tables are like you're eating on like a bottle cap and stuff like that. Like you're like eating like you're even shrunk down to the size of a mouse.
Wow. Yeah, some of the tables have umbrellas and their little drink umbrellas.
The cocktail umbrellas, yeah.
That's like the umbrella on your table. Some of the seats were corks, and the table was like the lid of a glass bottle of jam type thing. So there's your Honey, I Shrunk the Kids thing.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds so like old school. That's awesome.
It was one of the probably one of the cutest, well themed Disney restaurants I've seen.
So I won't get too much into the ride because it is coming over here. But I mean, I noticed something, and Brittany was like, "Oh, well, you look for things that are wrong."
Mm-hmm,
but for me, this was pretty glaring. So if any Imagineers listen to your show, or if anybody, you know, like they just listen to it to kind of hear what's going out there, throwing this out there that because it's a screen-based ride, I noticed that like you'd be watching the screen directly in front of you, but right in front of that was like 6 feet of like cement of where like the cars could roll over. So it was like it was kind of a glaring effect to me that you'd be paying it like. You know, like if you're on a simulator ride, you're like only paying attention to the screen because it's kind of like it kind of like wraps around you. Like yeah. You've done Flight of Passage and stuff like that. And if you look really hard, you could see the edges. Here, like you would see the screen, but like you would see like 6 to 8 feet of cement in front of that. So it kind of takes you out of the scene. Like it's very clear that you're watching a movie scene. So I was thinking that'd be kind of cool if they had like some top projectors onto the like onto the ground to kind of envelope you more. You know, it feels more like you're just moving from movie screen to movie screen versus from environment to environment.
Okay. Well, maybe they'll plus that up.
I'm hoping that they plus that up because, I mean, did you notice that at all, honey?
after you said something the second time through.
And then it was kind of obvious.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
First time I was just enjoying the ride, and he's finding all the flaws.
I would have liked an animatronic Remy at the end. But you know, it's just, I feel like I would have made a, for a really good Imagineer, I would have been like my own worst critic, though. So they also have Tower of Terror there. And they have the California version of Tower of Terror.
Before it became Guardians.
Right, the one that was there before. Yeah, so it's not it's not the good one. But yeah,
So if you get nostalgic and you really miss the California Tower of Terror, it lives on.
It's the same thing, although it is... It looks like a falling apart building. Like, the idea is that the building's falling apart, except it really is falling apart. Like, there are, like, nets to catch falling rocks. Because I've read that the rocks have actually been falling. Like, the concrete has fallen off and almost struck guests.
Wow. Yeah. That's sketchy.
Other strange thing with it that I noticed was that, like, one of the guys and one of the girls that were working there were very openly hitting on each other. Like, you would never see that over here. We noticed over there, people had a very hard time staying in character. Mm-hmm. Or, like, as a cast member. They were very much, like, going on about their personal lives and stuff or flirting with each other or what have you. And I think that this is one of those things where Disney is going to be like, okay, so we need to fight the smoking thing. We need to make sure that the rides are being loaded. We need to make sure that the cast members – are saving their dating for outside of the ride.
I will say to the smoking thing, some of the cast members were really good about catching people. But in France, that kind of is such normal to see people walking around smoking. I don't think it registers in the cast members' minds.
So,
to like stop people.
So there are three more attractions in this that we have to kind of, four more that we have to talk about. One is the Stitch show, where it's Stitch talking to you. We did this in Hong Kong, and they had an English version of this.
I will say something that was really neat with the Stitch Live and with Disney Junior Live on stage, which we did not do. Every other show was in English. So you had, for Stitch Live, it ran every 15 minutes. On the 15 and the 45 was in English. So, and, you know, Disney Junior was the same way. So both shows filled up because there were a lot of English-speaking people there. But it was different. Hong Kong, we did Stitch Live, didn't have a clue. I mean, you could follow along, but...
And picture Turtle Talk with Crush. If you've ever done, like, Turtle Talk with Crush, you kind of know what it is. It's a cartoon that talks to the kids. They do have Rock and Roller Coaster there, and it's a very...
I'll take Rock and Roller Coaster. If you've ever been to Hollywood Studios, imagine walking into the area with Rock and Roller Coaster. You have this big red guitar that has the Cadillac on it, and it's this big dramatic entrance, and they're playing Aerosmith songs. If you're curious, it's the 2-CD box set in order. That's your Rock and Roller Coaster. Here, there's a building with a sign that says Rock and Roller Coaster with Aerosmith. And a giant CD that looks like a cheap billboard. And what were they playing? The theme to...
Oh, they were playing the theme of Army of Darkness on the outside of it.
Hmm.
I was like, what the heck?
Weren't they playing, like, Linkin Park when we were leaving?
Yeah, they were playing Linkin Park. It's just like, as much... Army of Darkness is my favorite movie of all time, although The Room is pretty up there. But it's like, I'm all for theming, you know?
Right.
The theming leaves so much to be desired, and you're just walking up to nothing. So we go in, we get on the ride. The premise is different. You're not in a hurry to get to a concert. You're helping Aerosmith test out their brand new roller coaster. What creativity. Yeah.
That's stupid.
But it has a video that features Aerosmith, and it has the studio, and it is a different video, and the video is in English. So that's different. So the first time we wrote it, there is no theming inside. The queue has theming when you're waiting to load the ride. the actual roller coaster ride itself has no theming in it, just black lights. And halfway through, Grant goes, do you realize you and I have been having a conversation on this ride? The car had no sound.
Oh,
we
wow.
did rock the roller coaster without the Aerosmith.
It's total silence. So it was fixed the next time, but it's a weaker version of it. So anyway, there's two more attractions we got to talk about. Okay, these are both very much smack your head moments. So the first one is the Armageddon Special Effects Extravaganza.
Armageddon, that movie from 1998, which Grant made a good point. The Steven Tyler ride is across from the Liv Tyler ride.
Oh, then the Aerosmith song was from that, right? Don't want to miss it.
Right, yes. So, because Liv Tyler is the love interest, and it's like I'm pointing out things going, oh, look, there's Billy Bob Thornton. He wore Angelina Jolie's blood. There's Bruce Willis. You know, it's just like, and you get in there, and it's narrated by Michael Clarke Duncan, which is kind of eerie because he's been dead for quite a while. And they're talking about making a blockbuster movie and how exciting making a movie like Armageddon is. And the thing is that movie's 20 years old. So what it is, do you remember Disaster, like at Universal Studios?
Yeah, where they show you how to do special effects and stunts.
Yeah, like you go into a room and you get narrated and they're talking to you about how they make special effects. And that's the attraction where they said, how many people speak English, how many people speak French, et cetera, et cetera. And we got French, but we got the English subtitles. Anyway, you ultimately wind up watching this 30-minute presentation about how they made the movie Armageddon.
Like, 30 minutes. Wow, that's kind of long.
This would be a DVD extra, normally. And then you get put into a room where you're, like, inside of, like, a space station. And, like, some fire effects happen and some, like, water effects happen. Like, you're being hit by asteroids as you're standing there. So picture a Backdraft or Twister. The old Universal attractions. But Armageddon, it's just so woefully outdated that you're just like going, is this real life and this is what I'm experiencing out here? And the thing is this park opened a few years after Armageddon had already been introduced, so it wasn't even current then. So the other attraction, which is even worse, is the Studio Tram Tour.
Well, oh, the fake studio tour.
Okay.
Catastrophe
so you get three
point,
you get three things that you do in it. One is Catastrophe Canyon, which is the exact same thing as what was over here where you the car shakes and there's water effects and there's fire.
And we gave him a round of applause because the fire effect was nice and warm and it was really cold out.
But that's nothing because you get to go by the giant actual sets from the hit 2000 miniseries that aired on ABC that nobody remembers called Dinotopia.
I have no idea.
No. Yeah, it's a miniseries that aired on ABC in 2000, and this is their big thing that the tram takes you by. And they're talking, and they have a video playing talking about how impressive the sets were to build for Dinotopia. And nobody knows this thing. It tanked. And you're like going, okay. And then you go to their piece de resistance, which is a burning city set simulating that you're in the movie Reign of Fire.
Oh,
you remember Reign of Fire?
Oh, that was another movie that bombed. That was a dragon movie, right?
A dragon movie from like 2003 with Matthew McConaughey. And there's no dragon even in the scene. You just get some fire that comes out from the well. Like, there's a well, like, fire comes out, like, there's a dragon in there. And you're just going, the biggest problem with the studios, Mark, is that they let everything just go. Things are so out of date and so non-current that it's hard to care about that park. It's basically the park that has Ratatouille and the Crush Coaster, and that's kind of how it's known over there. They are having, from what I understand, they are looking at possibly doing Star Wars Land there or Avatar or a Marvel area. They need to do something.
They need to do all of those things.
Yeah, that's part, all at once. Just close the park. Maybe you have like a little area open. The Crush Coaster and Ratatouille are right next to each other. So just leave that part open and have that included with your park ticket because
that park is a jumbled mess that is so outdated. I mean, when you go into the Studio Tram Tour, they have posters for 102 Dalmatians, and you can see the vehicles that were used in 102 Dalmatians, and most people don't even remember that that was a movie.
I barely remember.
So anyway, I will say, all in all, of all the Disney parks that we've been to, that's kind of a middle ground one. If you have never been to a Disneyland park, it's a fine one to go because it has a little bit of everything. It has the dark rides. It has the roller coasters. It has it's a very pretty park, and it has great shows. But if you have already been to Disneyland or Magic Kingdom and you want to go out of the country, I would say do the Tokyo, Hong Kong, and Shanghai ones because they have more unique attractions. Especially knowing that we are getting Ratatouille over here already. So the only real unique attractions are Phantom Manor and the Crush Coaster. Mm-hmm. So everything else, there's a version of that.
Right.
So I would say go to Hong Kong first. Go to Tokyo. Go to Shanghai before you do this one. But
that being said, we're already planning another trip there in the future.
We will go back to it in 4 or 5 years because in Paris, you know, like the nice thing with where they put all these parks is they're in places where there's a lot of cool stuff to do. So, you know, they give you incentive to go back there if they put in something awesome at a park. So we would go back to Disneyland Paris if they put in a very unique attraction that we don't have over there because it gives us more of an excuse to go and see the city of Paris.
Right. So you guys did, to wrap up our recording here, you guys did a little bit of Paris sightseeing, some of it typical tourist stuff, I guess. But one thing you guys briefly mentioned to me about sounds terrifying to me, which is a dinner that you guys did. Do you guys want to talk about that?
Yeah, I'll happily talk about this. I will say, first off, I did not let Brittany know that we were going to do this.
Wow.
And that I have reservations to this until a couple days into the trip. Because Brittany does not like traveling on airplanes and gets very nervous about that kind of stuff. So the idea of eating in complete darkness was, I knew that that would set her over the edge. So I made the executive decision to keep her in the dark about dining in the dark.
However, he told me about all the cute character dining in Disney to, you know, keep me entertained.
So what happens, this place is called Dans des Nords, and Brittany's like shaking her head. How do you pronounce it, honey?
Dans
des Nords. What it is you go in and you're in this lit room and it's normal and they have lockers and they make you take all of your personal belongings and put them in the locker. Okay. And that's including your phone because they do not want your phone going off. They do not want you having any semblance of light. We're basically now we can't even have coats on or anything like that. They say it's warm inside of there, and you get three mystery dishes, an appetizer, an entree, and a dessert, and three mystery drinks, and mine were all wine. And what happens is you go in with this group of people and they have you put your arms on the person in front of you. Blind conga line going into complete pitch blackness. There is no semblance of light and your waiters are completely blind. The idea of this is twofold. A, you eat with your eyes before you eat with your stomach, meaning like you're going to take a look. If you see a hamburger in front of you, you're going to go, yeah, I can't wait to eat this hamburger. I know I'm going to like this hamburger because I like hamburgers.
Right.
The other idea is it's giving you an insight of, for an hour, what it would be like to be in that position where you had no sight. And I will tell you, it is absolutely freaking terrifying.
Oh my God. So it's an hour long, the experience?
It's an hour long or so. Yeah, 45 minutes to an hour, something around that time. And so what happens is I'm behind Brittany going through this conga line, and you're walking through and you're hearing noise. And it's very loud because it's a restaurant, but it's in pitch blackness. And they're trying to lead you to where your seats are. And they separate me from Brittany. And you cannot see anything in this place. You lose all bearings. And I'm freaking out. And I'm yelling at her going, where are you? And what they were doing, they were trying to get us to sit across from each other. But it's a long table that they have everybody at.
So oh, okay.
What they do is that they're walking. They walk you individually and they stop you. And then they pat you to get you to sit down. Like there's a chair there in front of you. And then we realized that we were sitting in front of each other. And they gave us a bottle of water in complete darkness. So you're now navigating how to pour water in pitch blackness. So, It's a very bizarre experience. And then they start giving you food, and you have silverware. And this is food that they change the menu every 3 months. But they asked me not to like post photos of what the actual menu was, because at the very end of it, you get to know what the meal was, what you ate. You are not told what you ate. They do not tell you what you are eating until after you are done.
Wow.
So, like, of course you start getting these thoughts through your mind. First off is, if they killed me, if there was somebody in here with a chainsaw, there is no escape. You know, I'm doomed. If this guy has infrared goggles and a knife, I'm screwed. Because how am I going to get out? I have no form of light on me.
What? Did you guys eventually see anything? Did your eyes adjust to anything?
No. No. But they do have a thing like if there's an emergency where apparently there's a light red light that comes on to kind of get your eyes adjusted if there was a problem.
Right.
And they had to turn on the light, which it would have been interesting to see what the dining room looked like. So the first course was a salad. I can say that much with some sort of mousse on it. And I said, is anybody else just using their hands to eat this salad? Because it's really hard eating with that. And they're giving you things throughout the courses that are unusual foods that you wouldn't normally eat to try to throw you off. And they one dish had like three components to it, which was like a rice component and a potato and a protein. And with different parts to that. And I will say, when we first sat down and I was trying to pour drinks, Brittany made a comment saying, I am going to have some thoughts for you about this later. Because she was not a happy camper to begin with. But I'll say that after about 10, 15 minutes of being in there and kind of realizing that it was kind of cool, we kind of relaxed and we had a really good time with it. And the dessert was delicious. And after the hour, they kind of stand you up and they walk you out and they march you out. And you slowly start seeing light and you can kind of slowly start getting your bearings. Although before I got my stuff back from the locker, you know, I had to kind of stand there for a couple minutes to kind of adjust to the light.
Wow.
And then I saw the menu and it wasn't anything overly unusual, although there were some bizarre components. And like one dish was a fish. And I was trying to figure out what it was because it's a fish that we don't have here in Florida, and I work at a fish restaurant. So I was like, what is the flavor of this? And it's just, I would never know that because it's a European fish, you know?
Right, right.
So I would say all in all, I would highly recommend doing that. It is very creepy. It's, you know, they were very friendly. I will say that they were like the friendliest service we had outside of Disney in Paris the whole time we were there. And I would highly recommend that to anybody.
Wow. I mean, that just sounds nuts to me. But I guess it's one of those things, once you get through it, it's kind of like, you know, you feel like, you know, it's just a shared experience. You say, you're just like, wow, we,
you know, yeah.
We survived the pitch black dinner.
Yeah. So we have now conquered every Disney park on the planet, and I will assure you that when the next one is built, we will be there.
Yeah, I don't know. I wonder where that's going to be. I mean, I haven't heard any rumblings.
There's actually rumblings of Tokyo getting a third park, and that they're going to be announcing it at their D23. And I think it's like in March or April or May, somewhere in there.
Mm.
Because they do have the space for it. It would be an awkwardly shaped park, but you know, their Disney Sea is an awkwardly shaped park and it's phenomenal. I've also heard rumblings that the new site for the third gate for Disneyland isn't going to be at Anaheim Stadium anymore, like the Angel Stadium, but it's going to be at that weird parking lot that they have you park at once in a while.
Toy Story. Yeah, I've been hearing that too. And that,
because they actually have quite a bit of land there.
And that, I guess, since we're talking rumors, I heard that this park is it's not going to be a typical park. It's going to be a higher end experience.
Oh, you're hearing that? I've been hearing that they're holding off on the Marvel for California Adventure, and they're just going to build a full on Marvel park there because Marvel movies have been doing so well, and do the gutsy thing and just have a full on Marvel theme park.
I mean, I definitely heard that because I don't know. It's who knows, but I mean, there's they've announced Marvel attractions for DCA that are supposed to be, you know, on the way.
But they all they said is that they're on the way. But I think if they came back at the next D23 and said, "Hey, well, we're taking that off the table, but we're doing this instead over there. By the way, you're getting a whole new park of all Marvel attractions." I think that people would be receptive to that.
Yeah, I'm sure they would. But who knows? So that's all speculative. But I mean, you're always going to go back to Disneyland. But I'm wondering, like, what new, completely new areas, you know, like only other place I heard rumors of or rumblings ever was somewhere in South America.
I've heard Brazil.
Yeah, which would be interesting.
For sure. I could see India maybe. I could see India maybe getting one. And I could also see South Korea getting one if tensions ever kind of calm down with the northern border up there.
Well, that's a little too close for comfort.
Australia, I've heard rumors of. That project almost happened.
Yeah, I heard it almost happened and fell through, so I don't know if it actually would or not. That'd be interesting.
But wherever they put one, we will be there.
All right. All right, guys. Well, thanks again for sharing your tales, your traveling tales, and you know, I'm sure you'll be back on talking about something because you guys are always going to crazy places, having new experiences.
Yeah, maybe not as much this year though, because Brittany's got to get a surgery, so it's going to cap her out for a couple months.
We are doing
on her foot because her foot almost broke on the trip.
Oh,
oops. So, but we are going to do a Disney cruise. We are doing a Disney cruise, and we may check out the Disney water parks later this year because we haven't done that. So we're going to but we do know that that either at the end of this year or beginning of next year, we are going to do Japan in much more earnest, including more Tokyo Disney and Universal and all that stuff.
All right, well, there you go. So look forward to hearing those adventures.
All right.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
If you would like to contact us here at Creepy Kingdom, you can do so by emailing us directly, creepykingdom@gmail.com. And very soon we will be having another listener feedback show. So if you have any questions, comments, or can email those in, and we'll probably respond to it on the show. And for show notes, some of the pictures we're talking about in this episode, links to all of our social media, our written articles, our blog posts, our entertainment news, our videos, everything Creepy Kingdom, just go to creepykingdom.com. Alrighty, kids. Well, until next time.
I have a girl now. It is midnight. Pleasant dreams.
This episode of Creepy Kingdom has been brought to you by Olivia Frankenstein. Olivia Frankenstein is an Etsy store that specializes in creepy-inspired enamel pins, buttons, t-shirt, patches, posters, bags, and much more, including their original design, Spooky Mouse Club, a must-have for every Creepy Kingdom citizen. You can check out that design and much more by going to oliviafrankenstein.patternbyetsy.com. That's oliviafrankenstein.patternbyetsy.com.